Good morning to all of you. Last standing survivors of last night. Thanks for coming to our session this morning. It's really good to see that you've made the effort, and hopefully we'll be able to share some interesting information this morning. Firstly, there was a bet on who could come up with the longest theme, and I took a stab at it. Now, actually, realistically, potentially this could be demystifying hybrid period, because we're going to dive into hybrid a wee bit and just clarify some of those sort of undocumented, unknown weirdness that we sometimes come across. Anyway, enough about the theme for now. So firstly, for those of you who haven't met me before, no, don't make noises. Let's do that. Right. Okay. So I'm a principal consultant at Lexel Systems. I head up the UC team over there with my teammates. Some of you may be familiar with Andrew, who's also an MVP and very active in this space. Been an MVP with Microsoft for, I think it's 3 years now. Thank you, Microsoft. It's been awesome. Get exposed to all sorts of interesting things, and that's always good for helping one along with evangelizing and taking over the world, because that's what we do, right? We also run the Auckland UC user group, so between Andrew and myself, and just happens to be that we have a session today from 3 to 5 at Microsoft. You can go and register for that if you're interested, if you're around. Dale Barnes from Polycom promises to be giving away some really classy champagne. I've heard it's good for hangovers. So come along and have a look. We're getting Jeff shirts over, and because good old Jeff has just got this massive amount of knowledge around the whole Polycom space and all the new meeting gear that's about to come out in the next quarter or two, we've got Jeff coming over, and he's basically themed his session as a spotlight on Polycom. I've told him I'll bring along some unhappy customers too, but he wasn't too excited about that. We'll see how it goes, good old Jeff. He doesn't come around here too much, so it's a privilege to have him. Oh, I see. You need a this way up sign on here? Very good. So the idea of the session today is, one, is to pick apart what fundamentally makes up a hybrid scenario. And very often, when we get into multiple subdomains, so that's very common these days, isn't it? We get organizations, they've got maybe a subdomain that's, or two subdomains, three, four, sitting up in a tenancy, but they only have one subdomain on-premise that they're really enabling for these sort of on-premise feature sets like the enterprise voice, which we have to do for today. And then you get to that sort of uneasy space where how do you get them to talk to each other? What is the underlying bits and pieces required to make these things work effectively? And so we'll be having a look at those, the components that need to be there, the considerations we need to think about. We'll also be looking at when you do that, what kind of things do you need to take into account when planning? Because there are massive implications. For instance, when you have two tenants that are merging, there's quite a big requirement over there that you need to take into account. And then to take it to the next step, we'll look at some deployment scenarios. We'll have a look at three different deployment scenarios. We'll look at an instance where you're hybrid. So that's just, by the way, that's the basis of this. We're starting out, our starting point is hybrid, single subdomain, ready to go. So you've already set up hybrid and you're kind of going to, whoa, we've just bought company X. How the heck do we bring them over? How's that work? So we're gonna look at that. So a new subdomain coming in. We're gonna look at a scenario where potentially you have a subdomain, you've started out as a tenant in your 365 environment, and now you realize that you need to bring it on-premise. How do you do that? And taking into account, we're talking about a secondary or third even subdomain. And then we'll look at the other scenario which I've already mentioned, which is merging tenants. How do you merge tenants? How do you, company X purchases company Y, there are two separate tenants. The tenancies come together so that you can benefit from the licensing and. How do you deal with that on a Skype for Business basis? So those are some of the objectives we'll look at. So once we're done, hopefully, you'll be fully equipped to take on the world and hybridize everything. Of course we will. We'll have a good understanding of what are the core components that make hybrid work. We'll also have a good understanding of what things to keep in mind when somebody goes, I just added mycompany.abc.com in the cloud, and I just realized that I need enterprise voice and I need some response groups and I might need to do some contact center-y bits. How do I bring that onto premise now? So you'll understand how to do that. What we won't cover, we're not going to be qualifying hybrid. That's been done many times, and Vaktan's done the same as well in his sessions. Qualifying hybrid is not what I'm after. We're assuming today where things are, and that's where I live. I live in a space where things are real and you can do today. So realistically, hybrid for me today is the best of both worlds. That's where you get the best of both worlds. You can have your on-premise features, you can have your cloud features, and you can move users up and down, and that's, you know, really where we're at. So qualifying why when you need hybrid is not on the agenda. And configuring actually just base hybrid, again, it's been said many times. There are some really good sessions on Channel 9 on how exactly to do that, and I'll allude to some of those configuration steps or parameters that are required, but I'm assuming that as a basis, we already know how to do hybrid. It's taking it to the next level that we're interested in. Also comparing, you know, on-prem with cloud, with hybrid, I'm not going to go there. Also, just by the way, now that the Mac client is out officially, I won't be talking about that either. And then all the PSDN options. They're, again, that in itself is a session, and that too has been covered many times. And realistically, some of those options are not here yet for us in New Zealand. And so perhaps we'll just park that on ice for now and just focus on, in my opinion, the best of both worlds, hybrid. So let's do that. Right, so just as a starting point, firstly, when we talk about Skype for Business Server, we're talking about an on-premise pool. We're talking about a deployment that's on-premise and you know, pretty much the traditional deployment. When we talk about Skype for Business Online, in that case, we're now talking about what is on offer in 365, so running in the cloud, as it were. So you may see me interchange those. I might say cloud user, I might say online user, same thing, in my mind at least. So keep up. And then, of course, hybrid. Hybrid is really, it used to be called split domain. The reason why it was split domain is because your domain namespace was split with on-premise and cloud, and you could move users up and down. Now, it also painted the picture that it was the domain itself that was split and not the actual configuration for the whole deployment. And so it kind of led you down a path of thinking which perhaps may have made it more challenging to understand. Realistically, though, we could still be talking about split domain when we're talking about hybrid. There's nothing inaccurate about calling it out as split domain, because really you have a user that's home to the cloud or home on premise, and the domain is pretty much in the shared address space across the two platforms. So clear as mud, right? Very good. So straight into the details. In a nutshell, we look at the scenario over here. We typically would expect, this is again just drawing that line in the sand for the baseline. The Office 365 DirSync's provisioned, it's all up and running. We've got this relationship between cloud and on-premise, which allows us to go to the next level. Now, I'm going to assume you're already syncing attributes. We've got mail in the cloud, and it's all just working. Because that's usually the kind of time when they go, oh, what about Skype for Business? And so this is the baseline. ADFS, single sign-on, set up, ready to go. Perhaps you're using password sync, all the same in the end, as long as it's, you know, there's a relationship over there and it allows me to use my credentials the way I'm expecting. So that's what we're indicating over there. Now, one of the things that's required for hybrid is obviously federation, because that's kind of the gateway between on-premise and cloud is through your edge infrastructure, so federation needs to be enabled. And in fact, one little tip, federation needs to be enabled the same way on-premise and cloud. And there's a very specific reason for that, and I'll talk to you about that a little bit later. So there we go, there's our federation setup between cloud and on-premise. And of course, as you've already seen, your voicemail unified messaging all goes via that path as well. And then, of course, we need PowerShell access from on-prem to cloud, because realistically, that's how we're going to tell the cloud what to do. That we're sharing address space, that we're moving a user, that we're bringing a user back, and all those beautiful things. And there's a little user move. It's just as easy as that. You see that? You just press a button and shoop. What actually happens is when we're moving users, there's quite a lot of user-impacting things to think about. We're going to have a look at those as well in a minute. and I'll bring that up in a demo. But realistically, what you saw there is on-premise user being told, whether it's through the control panel or through PowerShell, just to be moved to cloud. And straight away, as soon as you do that, there are some features that are grayed out, disappear, because of the functionality available in the different areas. So just looking at a user configured in, when you're looking at your AD attributes, these are the attributes you'll be looking for the user. You'll see there's a deployment locator attribute, and when the user is in the cloud or online, you'll have that sipfed.online.link.com. That's static, it doesn't change. When the user is on-premise, SRV indicates really that you'll be using the SRV records to determine where the user is. Quite heavily reliance on the attributes and of course, DNS in this case. And then we've got the primary user address, that SIP address. Same old. There is a little tip, just a little pointer. If you've started out your deployment and you've deployed mail in the cloud from start, there's a little attribute over there called proxy address. I don't know if you've seen this, usually that attribute is populated with SMTP colon in your SIP address. Now, I'll take the moment just to say that best practice, you really want your UPN, your SIP address, and your email address all to be the same, right? It just makes the world such a nice place. And you get some difficulties when they're not. So let's assume you've started out with mail in the cloud, and you don't have an attribute in proxy address. You know what happens when you take a user and you go, I'd like to go hybrid? What actually happens is that attribute gets synced back into 365. 365 expects to have SMTP colon and your address in there. When it doesn't have it, it goes, oh, what's my fallback? Oh, it's on Microsoft.com. And magically, when you move a user or you go into hybrid mode from an on-premise deployment, magically your email address is changed to on Microsoft. That's painful to fix. So make sure, it's one of those little tips, make sure that from the get-go, you've got a valid SMTP colon entry in that attribute. Very good. Let's have a look at a quick demo. So for starters, I'll just show you my hosting provider. You'll see over here I have the Skype for Business online hosting provider. That's really the pointer record that tells the on-premise deployment where the other half of the deployment is. So you'll see, for instance, there I've given it the name, of course. The proxy FQDN is sipfed.online.link.com, so that's pointing to the edge servers of the online deployment. And you'll also see that just below that, use source verification, we've got enabled, we've got shared SIP address space, true. That's telling it that we're gonna have users both on-prem and cloud. That's really what we're saying. And then, of course, hosting users is true. And then there's that auto-discover URL. Now that URL, you will get a fright when you come and look at this, because when you add it, you don't actually add it to look exactly that way. And when you come and display it, you go, hang a second, where those two characters come from on the end of web.dir? Don't panic, it's just based on where the tenant address is, so it's going to add that anyway. So that's just telling me that I do have shared address space configured on-premise as this hosting provider. And if I go and have a look at a user, for instance, let's have a look at this user. This user over here, just looking at the user attributes, this user is an on-premise user. How do I know? Well, if you have a look here in GetCS user, we've got hosting provider is SRV colon. So remember that table we just looked at before? When the hosting provider is SRV colon, it really means that the user is on-premise. And then when we look at the registrar pool, you can see there's my front-end pool as such. And so if we look at a user that's in the cloud, Dave over here, you'll see a different case. He's got hosting provider SIPFED, and there's no registrar pool indicated. I guess a good thing to think about when you're looking at these scenarios is think about a user as being moved between pools. Think of cloud as being a separate pool, perhaps, where the namespace doesn't really matter too much. Very good, so let's have a look. Potentially over here, if you have a look at my users, you'll actually see that I've got a number of different users, and I've got two SIP domains over there. I've got Travis, who's sitting in UC Sorted. I've got some old friends, the old UC heroes, eh? So Tony Stark, I've got myself sitting over there. So Tony's in cloud, myself is on premise, Dave is cloud, and then we've got Bruce. Now, I'm going to continue to play with these users and show you how they will and won't work together, depending on how we've configured the backend. And we'll do that in another demo a little bit later. But if I took, for instance, if I took perhaps Paul, and I said, hey, I'm going to move Paul to the cloud. What I could do is, in this particular case, this is where I put my glasses on. There you go. Oh, look. So it says, yeah, that's okay. We can move you to the cloud. To do so, though, we've got to tell the cloud that the user's coming, right? So it tells us, hey, look, that's what's required. I go next, and it says, okay, you need to sign in. All right, I'll sign in now. If you've done this before, you would have noticed that when you try to sign in with your admin account, and your admin account is ucsorted.com or contoso.com, that it comes back and says, nah, couldn't let you in. And the reason is simple. It's a little bit of a trick in the back end. It does kind of allude to it, but it actually uses the link discover.domain record to find out where to go. And where is that record pointed to? Usually on premise. And so you're saying, I'd like to sign into Office 365 on premise. And it goes, nah, can't do that. So what do I usually do? I just use a on Microsoft account to go in there, because I'm going to get around that. Some blogs will tell you, oh, don't move that record yet, because otherwise you can't. It's not necessary. Just use an on Microsoft admin account, and you'll be sorted. Of course, my account is appropriately named Cloud Admin. Just occurred to me the benefits of co-hosting. I could have somebody doing this while I'm talking. Right. Okay, so I'm signing in over there, and in the background, it's firing up some PowerShell. It's connecting, and I've already said what I want to do, didn't I? That was the first step. I said, this user, I want to move to there. So this is something you're quite familiar with, and just for the sake of showing them, this is actually a real environment. It actually does exist. And may I say, it's quite a mission to build a multi-SIP domain environment that's live as a demo, you know, as a platform to play with. There you go. We're back in, and it says, right, you're successfully in there. I'll go, okay, do you want to move that user? Yep, go for it. Now, hopefully that takes, for those of you who don't know, that takes 30 seconds plus X. I have no idea what X is, and so keep your eye on it. Now, in the meantime, there are some impacts. There's a definite impact on a user when you move a user from cloud to on-prem or on-prem back to cloud. Besides the fact that there are attributes that are not used in both areas, like your line URI and so on, one of the most sort of impacting things I've come across is the meetings. Why is that? Well, when you're in cloud, when you're online, your meeting space is really link.com, and then it goes slash and your company name. What's your meeting space when you're on premise? Well, it's usually, if you haven't changed it, it's usually going to be meet dot and then your domain space, right? So what happens to all your scheduled meetings? Well, fundamentally, straight away, all the URLs are no longer valid. And that can be quite painful if you don't see that coming, especially when the CIO has a scheduled board meeting that happens every Monday morning, and you do the migration on a... Oh, I'll tell you about that in a sec. And then you fire up the URL, and it comes back and says, well, there's something wrong with this meeting space. I can't get there. And then you have a problem. The reason why I'm having a little bit of trouble right there is because this user is an administrator. So what happens when you try to change the attributes of an administrator user who has block inheritance? Well, all sorts of lovely things. So I'll just override that for a second. Right. Yeah, we'll do it again. Fortunately, I don't have to sign in again. So we can just go, hey, we'll take that user and... Success next time, yes. Very good, we'll see that come through in a minute. Now, what do you do with the meetings? Well, you could go and tell the CIO that he needs to go back into all his recurring meetings and send a refresh. He's gonna love you for that, isn't he? So that's probably a no-go. Realistically, we'd like to do something from an administrative perspective, to fire up some cool command that goes, hey, all you all, update. And that would be perfect. But this is not a perfect world, and there's no such luck. The only way to do that, there is a tool, meeting migration tool. I'll show that to you as well. Did my user move? Yes. Okay, so it was just a case of administrative pain, right? So I'll come back to my my desktop user, who is over here. Come on. Right, here's my desktop user. I'm signed in as Dave. Just while we're doing this, you'll see a cool little application in the back there. Good old Bounce GA. Thank you, Mr. Sheridan. Really cool for jumping in and out of different environments because it remembers you can set all the credentials. And when you're jumping in and out of environments as I am, it can be quite painful. Right, so here we go. You'll see I do have a meeting scheduled at 10:30 and I'm late. But never mind, it's still valid. So I've got to fire up Outlook as well just to make sure that you can see that. There we go. So I want to jump into the meeting so I can show you that the URL, I've just moved this user to online, right? So yeah, I've got all sorts of friends, eh? Look at those. They're all New Zealand based. We'll fire up our meeting over here. I'll just check to see if the flame has gone out on my VM. Give me a sec. There we go. So if I have a look at this meeting, look at that. It says, I don't know if you saw that. Basically, it said meet ucsorted.com. So that's my on-premise domain, ucsorted. Definitely not a cloud domain space in terms of this deployment. So that's invalid. If I go there now, there's just no way that's... It should actually tell me that that space is broken. There we go. Fair enough, right? Fair enough. So how do we update that? Well, the way to update, I'll just close this. I can go send update and it should update it. But here's this tool that was a long time missing. There it is, Skyfall Business Meeting Update. Free download, you can just have a search for it. It's on TechNet. There it is. Now, one of the things it does, it's client-side only, right? So, I know, take a deep breath. Mr. CIO, I'm gonna have to run a tool on your PC and you're gonna have to open up Outlook and Skyfall Business at the same time. And then you run this and it goes magically and fixes everything. Yeah? Okay, let's try that. So it says, hey, there's the, in case I've got multiple accounts at the time, you know, it goes, yep, is that the meeting links you want to update? Yep, okay, cool. And I say, yes, please. And off she goes. It says, hey, you need to open up that. Oh, there's a meeting, found it. Did a quick check, says, yep, here's a meeting. Oh, meeting is really keen for me to start. And I'll go, yep, it's already selected, update, and in progress, watch the update status. And we wait. Oh my goodness, this is a persistent meeting. There you go. Now, I have a really persistent meeting. It says done, okay, finish. Good stuff. So if I come back into my meeting over here, I should have a new URL. Oh, look at that. Did you see that? Meet.link.com. So that's the meeting update tool. Definitely something you want to talk about before you move a user. Because if you move a user and go, oh, I shouldn't have done that, move them back, too late. So you definitely want to flush that out way before you start. It's, for me, it's been one of those little sticky points that's been quite upsetting for some of the sort of senior management. They don't like to be messed with. So very good. Okay, let's... Let's jump back into our content over here. Right, so this is really where we're headed. What when we have multiple subdomains? How does that work? Well, let's think about a few things. When we're planning these things, it's easy enough to handle one DNS zone, right? That's nice and easy, and perhaps you have, you know, certificates to worry about. You've got a synchronized environment. There's the AD attributes. So when we're looking at the on-premise side of things, when you're going to expand your deployment to have additional subdomains, the common sense, the logic, is that you'd add that domain to the topology. And when you, the on-premise topology that is, right? And so as, I think it was Vaktan who said that hybrid is a configuration. He's right, and that's the configuration we're looking at. So you add it to the topology, and when you publish the topology, what happens? Well, there are additional DNS records added for meet and dial-in, of course. There's additional considerations around that too, because you'd have to add that to DNS, hence we have DNS there. There's link discover that needs to be added. Then, of course, all of those names need to be added to your certificate. If you're using a wildcard on your reverse proxy, well, the reverse proxy is fine, that's supported. You cannot use a wildcard on the Edge server, right? But now, multiple SIP domains, unless you can get star.co.nz or .com, you may be in a tight spot, because you can't do it anymore, right? Yeah. What you can do, though, is you can add multiple rules. So depending on the reverse proxy you have, there are definite things there that you can do, but it needs to be considered. And then, of course, user attributes. This one catches me every now and then. I forget that folks go, yep, I'm going to synchronize my environment to Office 365 for the sake of mail, and they go, what's all this MSRTC? Nah, don't need that. Uncheck. And then I come in there and I go, yes, sweet, I'm going to set this up. Environment synchronized? Yes. Yay, let's go. And then when you try to move the users, he goes, nah, some weird error about, DCOM object missing. And you go, what? You have a little dig and you find out, oh, somebody's unchecked the MSRTC attributes that are required. And the ones that are required, there's only about five or six of them. At the end of this session, there is a URL from TechNet. In fact, for all the information I'm covering, that you can go back and research and read up on. And in there is a guide and tells you exactly which attributes are synchronized and gives you a little description of what they need. Most importantly, deployment locator. That's a good one to have. And of course, your SIP address, is the user enabled and such. So we need to think about those on premise. What do we need to do cloud? Well, cloud, you don't really have a topology as such that you can go and add something to, but you can go to settings domains and add the domain. So what am I saying? I'm saying that when you're adding multiple SIP domains, the domain, remember it's really split domain, the domain needs to live in both areas. It needs to live in the cloud and it needs to live on premise, otherwise you'd be in trouble. Again, DNS, there are DNS considerations. Now, a rule of thumb, with DNS. DNS needs to point to where the users are created, where they live. So I'm talking about the user account as such. That's where DNS needs to point. And potentially I might be alluding to something else we'll cross a little bit later, and that is when things get a little complicated, when you have perhaps a university with 2,000 faculty on premise and 60,000 students in the cloud. How the heck do you make that all work together? So we might touch on that. And then of course, again, certificates. Remember that when you're online, are you adding any certs? No, you're not. So you're not adding a link discover, you don't have a meeting URL, you don't have a dial-in URL that has a certificate that you need to take care of. So things change now, so now you've got to think about it. So I've called it out as a consideration. Very good. Configuration steps. Now, we've kind of touched on most of this already, but I'll just run you through. So we go in, we must have the SIP domains in the topology on-premise. In the tenant space, you must have the tenant as a domain. Public DNS, well, all the DNS records, not just SRV, your link discover and that sort as well, all of them need to point to on-premise. Let's pause for emphasis. They all need to point on-premise. That's the supported way of doing it. So when you've got a environment with multiple SIP domains, all the DNS records need to point on-premise. Because that what happens then is when user X tries to log on, he goes through the logon procedure, gets redirected to on-premise. On-premise goes, hey, AD, where's this guy? What's his deployment locator status? Is he SRV colon or is he SIPDIR? Where do I send him? And then that will redirect the client. Now, it only happens the first time you log on. After that, it's cached. And then the client doesn't go through that whole rigmarole. It just goes, oh, yeah, I remember. I'm cloud. I'm just going to go to the cloud. So important to know. Internal DNS, I've got a little asterisk over there. This is a interesting subject. If you looked at that in Google, you'll find all sorts of responses. You may have noticed that if your Edge server is pointing to an external DNS lookup for, to Google or wherever, and it can find your SIP federation record, it's all good. And then what happens is somebody starts making a noise about how that's not a safe way to do things and, the whole security team come down and you go, hang on a second, we don't want that. All our Edge servers must be pointing internal for DNS. And you do that and boom, all of a sudden your presence is broken when you're outside. And you go, what's going on? I can still message, but the presence isn't pulling through. It's because your Edge server needs to be able to resolve the SIP federation record. So this is known. What's not known, though, is where do you point it? So I've read some interesting articles. Some guys will say you need to point it to the access edge FQDN. So you need to point it out, hairpin back in again. Again, I've got customers going, what? I don't do that. It's happening. I don't do that. Yeah, fair enough. TechNet says point it to your front end pool. I know. Mine's pointed to front end pool right now. Works fine. Sometimes TechNet's right. Most of the time TechNet's right. Right, and then of course that line over there. All hybrid users must exist in AD. Now I'll talk about that environment again, where I've got faculty that's on-premise and 60,000 students in the cloud. Do you put your student accounts on your on-premise Active Directory? Probably not. So what are you gonna do? Notice that there is an uppercase word in there, must. This is, again, I'll state this clearly, this is a supported way of doing it. This is the way you should be doing it. Now, that does scare the lights out of a project when you've got to suddenly take your 2,000 user AD and make it 60, 100,000. And if you're interested in finding a way to get around that, come have a chat to me after. Supported. This is supported. Licensing. You cannot move a user to the cloud if they're not licensed. If I remove the licensing from my user that's on-premise and go move to the cloud, I'll get an error. And when I go and have a look at the error message, it'll say, the user's not licensed. We can't give him cloud features because he's not licensed. And then, of course, the user attributes that we've spoken of before and the certificate. So you get the idea, right? Scenarios. Now things get interesting. So we're going to look at three scenarios. One is when we add a new subdomain to an existing hybrid scenario or deployment. Another will be when we've got a domain that's in the cloud, because we're in New Zealand, right? We always start out in the cloud, don't we? I come across that quite a lot. Organizations will go, I'll just have a little taste, just a little play. Microsoft Marketing doing a good job in getting people on board. And you start out there, you go, this is awesome. I can get this and this and this. How do I get a phone number? Oh, you can't. Oh, well, what do we do now? We'll have to bring that user onto on-prem. And so now you've got to get around that. So I'll talk to you about that a wee bit. And then, of course, when tenants merge. When tenants merge, things get interesting. We're just busy working through a tenant merger. And you've got to realize that you can't really take a user from one tenant and take that user with all its current configuration, attributes, meeting content, and go, okay, I'm going to carry you over here and drop you over here on this tenant. You can't actually do that. So it's not quite a merge, but it's a process of achieving the experience of merger. So we'll look at that as well. Right, so let's dig in, adding a new subdomain. So these are the considerations. Again, I'll point out that we're just basically setting the baseline and then we'll build on top of that. So single Skype server infrastructure. No, you cannot have multiple Skype for Business infrastructures with a hybrid configuration to a single tenant. Can't do it. One to one. One tenancy. One Skype for Business infrastructure. It's just the way it is. However, when you're talking about merging organizations, very often there's, oh, I've got this AD forest and I've got that company which we've just bought, so we've set up some trusts, and so now we're using third domain as a resource forest, and we've installed Link over there, or Skype for Business, I knew I was gonna do that. And how do we do that? It is supported. It is, as of fairly recently, you can now do resource forests. But fundamentally, we're looking at a single AD forest. Obviously, you need to have your Office 365 single sign-on, data sync, all that sort of stuff up and running, ready to go. DNS, the DNS can be challenging because you get into an organization who's very sensitive to their DNS and changes to their DNS, and you go, oh, can I stand up a new zone, please? No, you cannot. Okay, well, I really need to because I've got all these users that are sitting in potentially cloud or elsewhere, and I need to bring that zone inside. Because if you're internal and you can't look up the zone, well, then you need to look it up external. How's that going to work? How are you going to do that? Look up external, redirect? No, that's not going to work. You need an internal DNS zone, right? So that needs to be taken into account. External, obviously, same applies. And then that mentioned earlier, UPN, SMTP, and SIP. Save yourself a lot of pain and just get those on the same plane, because when they're different, you will find some interesting things that can mess you around. It's just not worth the trouble. And so it's much easier just to stick with that. One thing that's sometimes overlooked is voicemail. voicemail subscriber access, auto attendant. Because usually when we, these days, most organizations have mail in the cloud, right? They're using Exchange Online. Where's your voicemail? Ooh, same place as my mail. Right, so we're gonna set up a SIP connection back into the cloud to deliver voicemail. Do we have ExpressRoute? No. Ooh, where's your tenant? I don't know, maybe in the US? That's a long way. How lovely is that gonna be? It might be a challenge. So you need to think about that. And sometimes the UM component is so important that it can actually be an obstacle. It can be a showstopper, potentially, depending on where the tenant is. I had a customer who had, the delays were starting to hit 8 seconds when you dial up voicemail, and sometimes it would just drop and go, nah, timed out. And I, you know, after a number of calls, I went, okay, so how does 80% success rate sound for voicemail? Oh, they were not so much excited. So, I thought 80 was fair. No, what you really want to do is find another way to do that, but call it out because it can be a problem. And then, of course, Federation. If you lock down Federation on-premise and you have a hybrid scenario that started out with the same Federation, what's going to happen is the users on-prem will take preference to the Federation configuration on-prem, and any users who are home to the cloud will apply by those rules. Can you imagine trying to troubleshoot an environment where I'm allowed to federate with Airways and Airways is not allowed to federate with me? And that's by moving the user to the cloud and back, it changes. That would be crazy. It'd be really hard to troubleshoot. And so it's very important that you keep that the same. Right, configuration. Now, what I've done differently from this configuration slide from the other one is I've actually called out what bits are on-prem and what bits are online, just so that it's a little bit more clear and it makes things a little bit easier. And you'll notice a little bit of a little more deep information as we dug in there. So we've got our topology. You need to add your new SIP domain. Of course, you do that on-prem. We've got the DNS records you add, both internal and external. You've got to update your certs. Don't forget, add the URLs to the reverse proxy. So far, it's pretty much obvious, right? Common sense. Our tenant online, you need to make sure you add that. So it's the same, really, the same process as before, but we're just calling out, you know, the details here. We've got our AD. You need a, this is a recommendation, right? People forget about that. You go to AD and you go, oh, really want to use my UPN naming to match my SIP. So go and add it. Go and add it to AD Domains and Trust so it's there and you can use it. Need to sync, not only make sync, make sure sync is there, but also make sure the correct attributes are syncing. And then, oh, this one's always forgotten, pick. So that is to allow you to chat to Skype Consumer. And it's always forgotten. I've been in some deployments where they've, oh, we've just done this and one domain, we can chat to Skype Consumer, another we can't. Well, did you remember to do that? No. Well, they're added to a register for Microsoft Federation on a domain basis, so you need to go and add that. And then, of course, users. Assigning the users, and I've got refresh meetings, but realistically, in this case, it's a new SIP domain, so potentially edit on that slide. This is purely for reference purposes, because you go, okay, it's all very nice to call out the DNS and say, make sure you add all the DNS. What are they? What are the DNS records I need? Yeah, they are. So there's the internal DNS records, all the usual ones. You'll notice there that I've got sip.newdomain in there. It's actually very specific that I call that out. You'll see sometimes folks will call out access or one of the others. SIP is one of the ones that's hard-coded in Office 365 in Skype Online. And so therefore, if you have an online tenant, you'll actually see it's in there and it's required, and it needs to be in the cert. If it's not in the cert, you get MSOID errors. So it's one of those little tidbits that'll slow your deployment down by 3 days and you go, oh, I'm pulling my hair out, what's going on? External DNS, again called out for the sake of calling it out. So remember that. This content will be available for you to download, and so you can always use this as a reference to move on forward, and because it's all collated together, it makes it a little bit easier. So in this case, we've really got everything resolving to either the reverse proxy, if it's one of the URLs, or to the edge, the access edge, if it's, for instance, our SIP records. And that's pretty much it, right? But notice how everything is pointing on-prem. Did you notice? There's nothing pointing to cloud. In hybrid, you do not have DNS records pointing to cloud. Done. Right. What about domain that's already in the cloud. Well, first thing that happens is, if it's already in the cloud, all the DNS will be there, and you have to go through the Office 365 portal, and you'll go and have a look, and all the DNS is there. So when you set it up, it goes, yep, check, 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 DNS, good, thank you, done. Once you've made the change that we're going to talk about now, every single time you go in there, go, hey, what's wrong with all this DNS? Why? Because it's expecting the DNS to be pointing to cloud. So as soon as you go and change the DNS and you say, no, I want all this DNS records, public DNS records, to point to my on-prem solution, Office 365 will continue to complain. You've got to go, just ignore that. I know what I'm doing. Just ignore it and move on. So let's have a look at the considerations. User migration. When you're moving the user, what impact is that user going to experience? It's an important thing to consider. We spoke about meetings before. Meeting content is another one to think about. What happens to your contacts? Anyone know? What happens to your contacts when you move? Well, they go with, right? They're really cached, they go along. That's not really a problem. It's when distribution groups, all that sort of thing should still be there. If you've ever run a program like Bounce, where you're bouncing between profiles, you may actually find that even between profiles, all your contacts keep going with. It's an interesting setup. It's really because those contacts are really, if you have a look in the back end, if you have a look in Outlook, you'll actually see there's a contacts right there. So it is a source of frustration sometimes, because it can make it really hard to figure out why contacts are behaving a certain way. But in this instance, they're quite handy. However, there is a warning. If you look at TechNet, they do tell you to look out for it, which may concern you. You may have the potential of losing some of those contacts. We've got the UPN, SMTP, and SIP naming address. Obviously, that's something to keep in mind, because we want to keep that the same. We've moved the user from cloud to on-prem. We need to make sure that the UPN name can be in there. And then, of course, my comment about DNS with a missing bracket. Of course, the DNS needs, it's much easier to critique your work when you're standing up here. Assumptions, right. Again, we're assuming that the on-prem deployment is fully operational, it's hybrided up without the new SIP domain that's coming in from the cloud. We've got the online tenant fully configured users up there, single sign-on sorted, directory synchronizations all sorted. So we're basically saying we've got this tenancy with a second SIP domain, and we've got an on-premise deployment that's one SIP domain synchronized. How do you bring the users in that second SIP domain down on-prem? Because if you don't, what happens? What happens if I leave them up there? Do you know what happens? You can't communicate between the two subdomains. It's because when the on-premise user goes, joeblogs@cloudskype.com, the on-premise deployment goes, I'll just check up the deployment locator for that user. Oh, there is no user like that. Throws an error on the client and says, user not found. Makes sense? The other way around works a little bit different, so I'll show you that in a demo. Configuration, again, this is purely so that you have a reference point. Same as before. What we have done, though, is right in the bottom with the users, there's a little recommendation. Before you start moving users, perhaps a good idea, go and collect all the users that are in the cloud. You can run that get CS online user command, and I like to collect that into a CSV file of sorts, store that somewhere, and potentially you want to clean it up, because you're going to have some on Microsoft accounts in there as well. And that's not going to work when you're trying to enable them on-premise, are they? So you want to go clean that up, tidy that up, and then you can move that. So there is a command for that as well. You can actually go and get those users, and then you can take that and pipe that into an enable. Because you really enable them. And when you enable them, you say, oh, I'd like to enable this user on-premise, home to the cloud. Right? So you've probably seen that before. But what we're basically saying is, when you move the user, be aware that you need to have that list of users ready to go. What happens if you don't? What happens if I go, I set up everything, and I don't get the users, and I just go on-premise, and I just go, oh, I've got to add the new user account. So I go add the new user, Joe Blogs, there he is. And I go, right, I'm just going to go and enable him for Skype for Business. I'll enable him. Done. Okay, he's enabled. Oh, I probably want to enable him for cloud. Maybe you move him to the cloud. What actually happens? Well, it overwrites the user in the cloud. And so you have some objects that are different. Keywords are different, and things don't work so nicely. And then you have to phone 911 and get some help. So realistically, what you really want to do is move that user. And it's weird, because I don't know if you noticed, we didn't actually remove, there's no remove or delete user from 365. Did you see that? You don't. When you go move user, it knows, oh, okay, checks the names, matches, oh, it must be the same user, merge. So watch out for that. Again, for the sake of, this is the same. However, you'll see there's a few NAs in there. So why? Well, these are new records. So the before state, if it's NA, then that record wasn't there before. And the after state, if it's NA, you no longer need that record. When you look through them, you go, okay, well, that makes sense. Why would I have internal DNS records in Office 365? Fair enough. Understood. And then, of course, the link discover record would typically be pointing to WebDir, but you would... Anybody spot a typo? I'll tell you what. I have a Target laptop bag up for grabs for somebody who spots a typo. Here it is. I'll give you some time to think about that while I go for, no, I won't go for lunch. I'll put that over there so to tempt you, and we'll talk about that. Oh, yes. Yes. One, two, three, four. Yep, so the TLS one's just before. That's kind of a, it's a record that's, I'll take that. That's a record that's no longer really, it's not used as much. Is that what you were alluding to? Yeah, we'll go with that. Okay, remember to come see me. Thank you for that. Oh, got it the wrong way around again. Here we go. So, again, the external DNS, same as before, calling it out for the sake of having it there so you can reference it. You'll notice that our meet and dial in our new records, SIP external, not so much required, but yeah, you got all these legacy devices and they'll look for SIP internal, then they'll look for SIP external. It's good to have them in there because you never know when somebody goes, hey, I saw this cool device and I know it's not on the supported list, but it says over here that it does log in. You want to, if you're going to be playing with things like that, you want to make sure you've got all the records because you just never know exactly what, unless you go into a deep dive and go and, you know, uncover all the details. So it's always good. I always like to just add all the variations, especially when people are using different versions of the client and all that sort of thing. Right, merging tenants. So, like I said before, it's not so much a merge. It's more like an export and an import and enable. So that's kind of the long and short of it. But, of course, when you're doing that, you can't merge two domains, can you? You can't go, when I say domains, I mean Skype for Business domains or Link domains. You can't go, here's my infrastructure that I built for this company and here's a totally different organization and they're now merging because of some corporate decision. You can't actually merge them, can you? What you have to do is you got to pick one and go, I'm going to go with this one. This one's my primary, so what I'll do is I'm going to have to decommission that SIP domain, bring it up over here. You can't have them at the same time because you can't have DNS records pointing to different environments. And so you actually have to go and export all those users, bring them over here. When you do that, the users have to exist. And so this is kind of the end when you've done your file and print and you've done your mail and done all the other crazy things that other folks are looking after. And then you get to do your Skype for Business, but you go, sweet, everything's ready. Right, let me move everything over. And that's really the bottom line. So there's no pretty way to do that. We're talking about an AD forest, so you know all the users are within that forest. Again, DNS, the same story with the UPN, SMTP, SIP naming, email and UM again. Remember that when you're doing things like when you're doing a resource forest, that there are some gotchas. Skype for Business assumes, there's a SID ID, the mapping WSF file, assumes that you actually do have Exchange installed and ready to go. And it actually uses the Exchange attribute to do the mapping. So be careful, you might find some pain over there. And then, of course, the actual user migrations. There'll be quite a lot of pain with the user migrations if they're coming from a totally different environment. The assumptions, again, we're assuming that there is one infrastructure that's already up and running, working, ready to go. And that's pretty much what we're calling out. Again, just calling out some of the bits and pieces to look out for. So you'll see that our on-premise, we've got our on-premise actions. We've got our online action, so the user and the tenant needs to go from one tenancy to another. That's, you can't, how much time do you have? Does anybody know? How much time do you have if you go, I don't want this SIP domain in this tenancy now, I want to move it to a different tenancy, so I've got to decommission. You don't move it, right? You decommission it, you wait for it to be released, and then you add it again. Anybody want to take a stab at how long that takes? It's not less than 4 hours, that much I can tell you. What I've seen is it looks at, you can bank on about 8 hours for that to happen. Can be longer. Now, can you weather such an outage when you're taking one tenant, moving it somewhere else? I call public holiday. But that's just one of those things, right? You just have to deal with it. And then, so you'll see I've got an asterisk over there for that, moving that along. And then the rest, again, part of the course, just rinse and repeat, same as before. So again, our DNS, same as before. Now, there is a little interesting thing that happens when your SRV record resolves to an FQDN that is different domain-wise from the SRV. Does anyone know what that is? Have you seen that? You get these additional prompts. It goes, oh, I'm not so sure about that. And it pops up with a box and says, did you mean to connect to this server? And then you go, yes. And it goes, okay. And off it goes. If you see that kind of thing, have a look at your records. The DNS can be a little tricky. Our external records, same as same old. If you have a look, everything's going to on-prem. That's the bottom line. Right, ready to get your hands dirty. Let's have a look. So from a sign-in experience, again, this is not new information. Sign-in experience is everything, remember, all our DNS is pointing to on-premise. So there we go, there's my user account. I fire up the sign-in process, hits the edge server if I'm coming in from outside, and that goes off to the internal server and says, hey, do you know this user, Paul? What's his deployment locator? Where's his hosting provider? I go, oh, SRV colon. Okay, that's cool. That means he's hosted locally. That's fine. Authenticate. If the user is potentially homed to the cloud, fires up, same thing, same process, fires up a request to the edge server. The edge server goes, hang on, let me go through to the internal side and have a look. Oh, that's Dave. Well, Dave's an online user. Here is his hosting provider. What happens? The client goes, thank you very much, and I'll be on my way, and off it goes. He goes and has a chat to SIPFed online and sends through a request to log in there. Same as you would see online. Goes through to the server, says, hey, do you know me? Yep, hang on. Let's just authenticate that coming through from our Office 365 identity management, single sign-on, all done, qualified, logged in, and hopefully sorted. What about IAM Presence? Well, IAM Presence, again, depends on DNS, heavily on DNS. So I alluded to earlier that the SRV records, the Federation SRV records, can mess with your presence, and they do. And so you want to be very much aware of that. And I'm not going to go through the audio and video media parts because that's just, realistically, that's just candidate negotiation. That's got nothing fundamental to do with where you're located. The candidate process, that stun and turn process, is still the same. So nothing new there. So here we go. There's my user. Goes up and has a look and says, hey, I'd like to send a message. I also want to call up. I want to register or I want to subscribe to the presence of Dave. He goes, yep, well, Dave's actually in the cloud. I know him. He's here, so don't get a user not found. I do know him, but he's in the cloud. So we're going to send your response through to the cloud. And the cloud goes, Dave. Yes, I got him. He's online. There he is. And boom, you're subscribed. And you can see that presence. Now, if you'll see there's a Steve up in the cloud there that says cloud user only. So let's say, and I come across this every now and then, we're supposed to be managing all the users from the on-premise deployment. There's that word which no dictionary has been able to explain to me. What is it called? It becomes authoritative. The on-premise deployment becomes the authority for the user, which means that anything you do to the user needs to be done from on-premise, fired up back to cloud, so it does that indication. And so when that happens, and you have a cloud user only, how did that happen? Well, somebody must have gone into the cloud and went, add new user, here you go. And there's Steve. And Steve, in my instance, is cloud only. Now, when a user is cloud only, Dave, who's in the cloud, when he looks up Steve, he's going to go, hey, user Steve, anyone know him? Yeah, sure. Okay, cool, he's cloud. Great, works fine. When Steve tries to talk, Steve, remember Steve's cloud only, tries to talk to Paul, who's on premise, same thing. Hey, do you know Paul? Yeah, sure, I know Paul. We're split domain, it's all no problem at all. And the online deployment refers you to on-premise, and it works. What happens when Paul tries to talk to Steve? He goes, hey, I'd like to chat to Steve, please. AD goes, Steve who? Don't know him, never heard of him. And so what happens? You don't get presence. Can they message each other? Yes. That's interesting. But what it does do is it helps us to understand how the layers are put together in the back end. And that is going to give us the opportunity to have a quick look. So, did you fall asleep? I'll just sign in here, make all my screens disappear. Right. Okay. So what I want to show you is I've actually done something interesting with my user account. You'll see that in the text field where you can put a little status, I've put on whether the user's on-premise, cloud, hybrid, wherever they are, right? Now, the only one that's incorrect right now is Paul, because Paul's actually no longer on-premise hybrid, because we migrated him, didn't we? We moved him to cloud. Fair enough. But what I'm trying to show you is if you look at those 6 users over there, you'll notice that we can see the presence of all of them except for Travis. Now, the reason we can't see Travis is a cloud-only user. Oh, sorry. It's bound to happen. He is an on-premise user only. I actually stuck him in an OU that I'm not synchronizing on purpose because I want to show you what happens. Everybody can talk to him from on-premise, but anybody who's cloud, well, they don't know about Travis because he's not in Office 365. And you'll also see when I sign in as Travis, it also gives me some alert about mail because my mail's in 365. Travis doesn't actually have a mail account, and so we get that. So what I'll do is I'll jump into Travis's account. So here we go. We signed into Travis, and there you go. There's our mail problem. We'll go, yep, that's okay. Don't worry. We understand. Now, who can he speak to? He can only speak to on-premise users. Look at that. Presence unknown for all the other users. Interesting, eh? Because Travis isn't really part of that split. He's not part of this whole split domain thing where we've got users on-premise and on cloud. Now, I actually have 2 subdomains here. You'll notice that all the superheroes are the ones who are in a UC Heroes, right? If you haven't figured it out. And all the regular folks, like me and Dave and Travis, we're just in the sorted domain. So you'll see, like Steve, for instance. Remember we spoke about Steve just before? I'm not even getting Steve's name resolved, because he's cloud only. At least the others, we're kind of getting the name resolved, but that's about as far as it goes. What I'll do is I'll just jump into Steve. Let's see what Steve has, what he can see. Oh, good grief. Come on, Steve, did you change your password? Oh. Yeah, so why can't I sign into Steve? Let's do that. Anybody want to take a step? Oh, that doesn't matter. That's Bounsky. Mr. Sheridan, when you watch this, take a note. So it's just showing you cached information. The actual name it's using is actually embedded in the back. But if you don't believe me, I can actually type it in. There's a different reason. The reason why Steve cannot sign in is, where's my DNS point? This is on-prem. He's on-prem. Where's my DNS pointing to? On-premise. Where's Steve's account? Not on-premise. So when he goes to sign in, the on-premise solution goes, I don't know who you are. But if I take Steve offline, take him outside, and I sign him in, what's going to happen? Well, actually, he still won't be able to sign in because the DNS is pointing on-premise. So he'll go to on-premise and go, hey, can you look up my user? I'm just trying to see where's my deployment. Am I cloud? Where am I? And it'll go, who are you? Go away. If, however, I went into Steve's account and I said, don't auto-discover, I want you to go to online, then he'll sign in, because we'll be bypassing the process, and it'll just consider him to be a normal cloud user. So really what I'm trying to say is that it's all in the DNS, right? You need to make sure that in every instance, when you're going hybrid, that the DNS is always pointing to the cloud, because it's to the on-premise. Right, so just a quick fly through what we've looked at. We've looked at hybrid and hybrid scenarios. We've looked at the gotchas. We've looked at some, it's actually quite easy if you think about it. It's not that hard, but it's a subject that's so little published that it can be hard to figure out what it is you're actually trying to do. And because what's on-premise and what's in the cloud actually behaves a little bit differently, it does throw a spanner in the works and can take you by surprise. We've looked at planning, we've looked at all the DNS records, we've seen all the different components you need to take into account, and they're actually common sense. Now, I don't want to belittle common sense by saying common, but it does make sense, doesn't it? Common just implies that, you know, everyone has it, so I don't want to go there. And we looked at some deployment scenarios. There's a fourth scenario, which if you're interested in talking to me about, come and have a chat to me after. The fourth scenario is potentially where you have users that are cloud and gonna stay in cloud within a tenant, and you have users that are on-prem, that may be on-prem or cloud, hybrid, like my university I alluded to earlier. How do you do that? It's doable. How do you do that? So I think we can effectively say we've had a good look at hybrid. Not the deepest of dives. We didn't look at logs and traces and so on. Time doesn't really permit, but we've had the opportunity to understand fundamentally how this fits together. It's not that scary, is it? So there are the references, and if you go and read them up and piece together the pieces of the puzzle, you should come to the same conclusion, hopefully. Hey, just remember, please do evaluate the session. I'd like to give you the chance to, you know, ask some questions. That's not my only bag, which is already gone. I have four more of those to go, and we'll give them to just some decent questions. So if you ask me something silly, I'm probably going to go, nah. So over to you. Sure. I was waiting for that. Oh dear, I should have just gone escape. Let's do that. Clicker is not my friend, eh? Needs a SIP address and then we'll be friends. Here we go. This slide. No? This one. Any other questions while I'm clicking my way through? That's the one. That one? That one. That's the one. There we go. Yep. So, for internal DNS, I'll leave that up there for you. So I'll let the cat out the bag. So according to TechNet, yes, that is correct. However, it works either way. But we're all about what is official, right? So that's fine. We will award you a bag for that. Realistically, there's actually nothing wrong with that DNS. What threw me originally is I looked at the link discover and I went, oh, where's that going? Ah, oh, it's going to the front end. I did the same thing that you did. Went, is that internal? Is it external? So this is actually correct, and it's the supported way of doing it. You don't, that SIP internal dot underscore TCP is a less used record. You'll see it's not in 365 when you have a hybrid configuration from 365 perspective. All right, okay, so I'll call that out as an awarded bag. And I have actually five of these suckers to go, so don't make me... yep. So the question is, when you're signing up for PIC, how long does it take before you get a happy customer email? I would have to say that it's 1 day plus X, again, with the X. And the reason is simple. I've seen it happen within a day. When you go through the portal, they tell you 30 days. I have not seen it take more than 2 days. Yeah. 2 weeks. What I have seen is if you give them they ask for your Access Edge FQDN, and if you give them something incorrect, it'll take ages to fix. So if you have to go back and change something, that's a support ticket. So you may want to check up on that. Find out from your account manager at Microsoft what's happened to that. You might be able to shed some light on that. We have a bag for you. So I don't do why questions. Works as designed. But I'll give you a bag for that. Well, you already have one. Hang on a second. That's sneaky, eh? Sorry, can you just repeat that? I'm not quite getting the...
So if you want to have a hybrid solution with the device voice on screen?
Yes. So the question is, how does a cloud user leverage on-premise enterprise voice? Okay, well, there's actually a long and a short answer. The short answer, you can't do it, and the long answer is, you can't do it. So realistically, what you have to do is, today, if you're gonna use on-premise enterprise voice, and you gotta bring the user on-premise. The only other way to do that is if you go Cloud Connector Edition, which is a different scenario entirely. Today for New Zealand, I have seen this. There is the possibility. I have actually seen that on the list of items in the sort of development cycle. They're looking at being able to do that. It's today. It's not part of what can be done. Yeah. Again, I have a long and short answer for you. because it's a client-side component, it has to be done based on the authenticated user. So the question is, can you script the meeting migration? Yeah, no, I've had a look at that in depth, had a chat to some folks who are smart about that, way smarter than I am, and they just went, it's just too painful. There has to be a way, right? But what you're actually doing is, think about this, one of the fundamental requirements is that both Outlook and Skype for Business needs to be open on the PC when you run it. So there's obviously some authentication and bits and pieces going on there and the connection between the two. And so no, unfortunately. Yeah. I think that's me out of bags now, is it? Except for you, you're minus one now. Right. Hey, thanks for coming, guys. I really appreciate it. And you've got my details. If you need to come and have a chat, I'll still be here for a few minutes and then I'll be kicked up.